This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, April 13th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, how can younger generations prepare for the climate change that's already underway? We'll speak with an award-winning team that puts hard truths into graphic novel formats. This time on Radio Nibbles, host John Lindorf will chat with an in-studio guest about restaurant waste and composting rule changes that took effect this month. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. After that is Black Talk, hosted by Michelle Simpson. Then at 9:30, Cameron Henderson will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead this morning, but first, a look at the headlines. With KGNU's Benita Lee.
The e-cigarette maker Juul Labs has agreed to pay Colorado over $30 million as part of a multi-state settlement. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser announced Wednesday that the company has settled a lawsuit claiming their marketing targeted young people and misrepresented the health risks of their nicotine vaping products. The state's investigation into Juul's marketing tactics found they used so-called brand ambassadors to distribute free samples and hired social media influencers to help introduce addictive vaping to young Coloradans. This is the largest settlement Juul has had to pay for its role in the youth vaping crisis. Juul will also pay New York, California, Illinois, Massachusetts, New Mexico, and the District of Columbia from a total settlement fund of $462 million. Three federal judges ruled Wednesday that the abortion pill mifepristone can still be used for now. The decision temporarily narrowed a ruling by a lower court judge in Texas who had attempted to reverse the Food and Drug Administration's 23-year-old approval of the drug. Colorado joined a multi-state coalition of attorneys general to challenge the Texas judge's decision. The case is expected to go to the Supreme Court. Boulder police are warning about a possible tainted or new strain of fentanyl in Boulder. Emergency workers have responded to 5 overdoses in the last 36 hours. There have been 25 reported cases of drug overdoses this year. Colorado House Democrats advanced a bill Wednesday to protect Coloradans who rely on public assistance programs from evictions. KGNU's Jimmy Searfoss reports.
Democratic Representative Junie Joseph of Boulder said the bill would help protect renters from being pushed out of housing over issues that could be worked out through landlord-tenant mediation. House Bill 1120 would require a residential rental agreement to include mandatory mediation if the renter receives financial assistance from the government because of the low income and/or disabilities. Rental agreements would also have to include language stating the tenant has the right to mediation conducted by a third party at no cost before the landlord can file an eviction complaint with the court. In addition, renters who had not committed sustainable violations could not be removed from the property by law enforcement for at least 30 days after the entry of judgment. For KGNU, I'm Jimmy Searfoss.
A long-delayed murder trial is finally underway in Adams County District Court. The defendant is accused of killing a 13-year-old boy nearly 5 years ago in what prosecutors say is a case of road rage. KGNU's John Kellen has more.
In opening arguments yesterday, prosecutors said Webster followed Megan Bigelow's car into a Westminster parking lot after being cut off in traffic. Megan Bigelow testified that Webster screamed at her and that she yelled back at him. She said he was about to drive away but stopped when she got out of her car to get images of his car's license plate with her phone. When he got out of his car, she said he had a gun, so she told her 3 sons to run. She walked in a different direction, but Webster followed her and shot her twice, including once in the head. Prosecutors said Webster then chased her boys and fatally shot 13-year-old Vaughn and wounded 8-year-old Aza. A witness to the shootings was also wounded. Webster has been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, according to the Associated Press. He's pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity, but prosecutors told jurors that the evidence will show he knew what he was doing. The trial, delayed in part by the pandemic, is expected to last through April 27th. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
A man who investigators say made repeated threatening phone calls to Democratic U.S. Representative Joe Neguse of Lafayette is in custody and facing charges of stalking, retaliation against an elected official, and bias-motivated crime. KGNU's Eli Kalin reports.
Michael James Kennedy of Denver was arrested last week. He remains in custody on a $50,000 bond until he is transferred to Boulder County for a preliminary hearing on May 1st. In the phone calls, the 59-year-old suspect, who is white, allegedly made references to white supremacy and threatened to shoot Neguse, who is black and who supports gun safety laws. This is the second case involving allegations of threats against Neguse. The first case involves a 52-year-old man from Denver and will be tried on Monday. From KGNU, I'm Eli Kalin.
The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment confirmed finding higher than normal levels of sulfur dioxide near the Suncor refinery in Commerce City Wednesday morning. Air monitors operated by the grassroots nonprofit Cultivando registered two separate and short spikes in sulfur dioxide. The Suncor refinery reported a brief malfunction in one of its sulfur recovery units yesterday. The Suncor facility has only recently returned to normal operations after a months-long reduction in the wake of a December fire. Denver broke a temperature record Wednesday with its 85-degree high. In Colorado, Thursday will be cloudy and not as warm, but winds will be stronger with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. The National Weather Service is issuing a red flag warning. In Boulder, a high near 76 and a low around 39. In Denver, a high near 79 and a low around 41. In Fort Collins, a high near 77 and lows around 40. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. The Earth's climate patterns are changing due to human activity and accumulated gases released into the atmosphere. While many trace the start of the warming trend back to the Industrial Revolution, the extraction and burning of fossil fuels in the last century have accelerated the march towards warming temperatures. The younger and future generations will bear the brunt of the consequences of the climate crisis. So how can adults talk about these hard truths without sugarcoating them or inducing unnecessary anxiety? And what role can storytelling play? Joining me live are three members of an award-winning team of creators of graphic novels, Owen Colfer, Andrew Duncan, and Giovanni Rigano. Good morning to the three of you.
Good morning.
Ciao.
Well, you are in Illinois, is my understanding, speaking to a group of students in just a little bit. But so thank you for making time this morning. You'll be in Boulder later this week for your book tour for Global, a graphic novel about climate change. What was the impetus behind this novel?
I think we're doing a series of novels at the moment. The first one is called Illegal. And I think the theme that runs through them all is kind of crises where children are at the forefront, if you like, where children are suffering the most. And I think with global warming, unfortunately, it's often the young people in the most deprived areas who are most in danger. So we wanted to pick two young people and zone in on those, and to make them the everyman for the people reading the comics so that they could empathize with these two and not try and just look at the whole world, but two people in particular. So we have Sammy and Yuki, and we're following them through their hazardous navigation of a world with an increased climate.
Sammy is based in the Bay of Bengal, on the coastal area of the Bay of Bengal, and experiences having to move his house repeatedly. He is orphaned, lost his parents during a awful storm, which are real storms that increase in intensity. Yuki is in the Arctic Circle, and she goes out on a very long walk to track a bear that is a mix between a polar bear and a grizzly bear, and has to go over thawing permafrost and things that are really realities in these areas that we maybe don't think about so much in Boulder, Colorado. What was part of the research as far as documenting things that really are happening but seem a bit far off in the imagination?
Sure. We wanted to make sure when we wrote this book that, like Illegal, everything in it was real. So the characters are fictional, but every single element of global warming that's portrayed, all of the symptoms of it, everything that's happening, all the stuff that you've just mentioned is all absolutely real and is happening today. None of it is stuff that scientists are predicting will happen in the future. It's everything is real. Everything has already happened. Excuse me. It's happening today. And as Owen was saying, there are lots of people, especially kids, on the front line around the world being really impacted by global warming and climate change absolutely today. And we were just sitting here just before we came on air, listening to your weather report, just saying about highs in this area. So even here, it's in the news every single day as odd temperatures, high temperatures, strange weather.
And I was, you know, it really struck me that as we were scheduling this interview, I received a press release from CU Boulder specifically about thawing permafrost and some alarming statistics that they had having to do with permafrost. It's like, wow, this is in the book that I'm reading right now. I want to also go back to illegal and how it is part of a set of challenges that future generations will be dealing with. And Illegal won numerous awards, including the New York Public Library Best Book of 2018, the Kirkus Review's Best Middle Grade Graphic Novel of 2018. And it was hard for me to find in the Boulder Library. I had to go out to one of the neighboring towns to find a copy in the library, which I sped read. So how do you go about preparing children and having these discussions? You're going to a school today. What's the tenor of these discussions with these younger readers who are processing what's coming through these novels? And does storytelling play a role in preparing them for a very different future than what their parents and grandparents lived through?
I think storytelling, I'm a teacher myself. I was for 15 years, and I always use storytelling as a teaching method because kids tend to perk up and listen. And then the information that you want to go in just goes in by osmosis and the kids don't even realize they're learning. And that's what we're trying to do here. So we've created this very exciting adventure story, if you like. But inside there, coded inside, is the truth of global warming and global heating. So we're hoping that the kids will read it almost as if they're reading a Batman comic. But at the same time, they're learning about what is happening to kids just like them, but in another location. And that way we will get them to the end of the story. And if they get to the end of the story, and then we have four pages of facts, very simply put, how global warming works and the effect it's having on the world. And this is just to show them that everything you just read, yes, it was maybe fun to read, but actually all that stuff is true. We're not just making up things about the Grolar Bears or the permafrost or the cyclones in Bay of Bengal, or the submerged islands. All of this stuff is actually happening. And when we go to the schools, we don't want to freak any of the kids out because there's a huge level of anxiety among young people about global warming right now all over the world. So we like to end it with, you know, if you are feeling a little bit anxious and you're thinking, I can't, there's nothing I can do here, you can do things. So we have a list of little things that kids can do. From planting a tree, if they want to do that to offset their carbon footprint, to maybe up in their recycling game and making sure everything is properly washed so that when it goes to the recycling center, it's not rejected. So there's a whole list of things that every child can do every day. And we like to end with that because that's a positive thing that will help change the future.
I want to take advantage of having Giovanni here as well. Giovanni Rigano is the illustrator of these graphic novels. How have you found just the fact that these are illustrated graphic novels as an entry point for younger readers? Would they, do you think they'd pick up the book if it was just words?
Well, I hope they will pick it up also for the drawings. As for the story, I took a lot of reference, took a lot of the documentation, and I try to adapt a style which is easy to relate to the young readers. So I really hope that they will enjoy the art too.
Yeah, the illustrations definitely show a heavy amount of research as well. Well, we are ending this segment. We are coming up on the end of our time. I want to throw it back to you, Owen. When are you going to be at the Boulder Bookstore this week?
Well, Andrew,
I'll just jump in.
Oh, Andrew, go ahead.
Really looking forward to being at the Boulder Bookstore on Sunday, April 16th at 2 p.m. You can come along. We'll be giving a talk. We'll be signing copies of Global, copies of Illegal, if anyone wants that. Any other books that we've written at the Boulder Bookstore. I'm really looking forward to coming to Boulder and seeing everyone. Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you so much. My guests today have been Owen Colfer, Andrew Duncan, and Giovanni Rigano. Their latest book together is Global, and they are also behind the award-winning graphic novel Illegal. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you, Shannon.
Thank you, Tom. Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You know that song. You know what it means. It means that it's time for Radio Nibbles. And I have John Lindorf in the studio with me, along with a special guest. Good morning, John.
Oh, good morning, Shannon, and good morning to everybody out there in the KGNU multiverse. You know, we've talked a lot on the show over time about practical ways to actually improve the environment. As far as food goes, and one area of disgust for an awful lot of people is the waste that came with takeout food, and it really came together during the pandemic. People started piling up these black plastic containers. One solution to it is reusable containers, and we've talked to our guest before. Ashwin Ramdas is here, and when we talked before, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
And when we talked before, you had just started up Repeater.
Yes, that's right. About a year and a half ago, we were an outfit called Repeater. It was just me and my co-founder, Chris. We started it in two restaurants in Boulder, and then we were slowly growing it. And then it was actually the last time we were here to chat with KGNU that me and Chris decided to merge the company and sell the company to Deliver Zero. So we're now Deliver Zero, and me and Chris are both part of Deliver Zero now, making it happen here again.
Tell us about Deliver Zero.
Yeah.
It's a national company.
Yeah, so Deliver Zero is a reusable takeout container service. It was first started in New York. Now it's New York, Denver, and Boulder, where we have restaurants. Essentially, it's we've created a reusable takeout container system that allows restaurants to give guests the option to get their takeout and delivery in reusables without any extra steps for the restaurant and without any extra steps for the user. Except for the one extra step where the user has to give us the containers back when they're done. But they can give the containers back right at their door with a free pickup service. So it's a very convenient, reusable container service that we believe can really scale and be taken to more cities and restaurants.
Let's talk about the containers. Because from a restaurant point of view, how the food gets delivered is very important. So
right.
what are the... I can see it, but obviously
yeah.
The audience can't.
Right. Yeah, so our containers are designed specifically for food service and for takeout. So they're pretty similar to the clamshells that you would see in a takeout service, but they're a very hard, durable material that it can be reused at least 1,000 times. So in their lifespan, they'll displace hundreds of single-use containers, and they're thermally insulated, they're stackable, they're all the things that restaurants would want out of the container, and they're a better presentation of restaurants' food because you're not getting like a floppy cardboard box or a styrofoam box, and you know, making this perfect meal and then putting it into a styrofoam box is not like the greatest joy for a restaurant.
Well, and even if the there was this tremendous amount of talk about compostable takeout containers, and many people have made noble attempts in that direction. But the reality with the current composting is that you can't compost.
Yep. Yeah, so compostable packaging is no longer accepted.
In Boulder County. Anyway.
In Boulder County and in Denver as well, where we operate. And so, you know, we kind of had that gut feeling for a long time. There's a lot of, I don't want to say greenwashing, but there's a lot of loopholes in the compostable packaging system where a lot of times ends up in the landfill. And so we've believed for a long time, which is why we started this company, that reuse is the real solution. We just need to make a scalable system, and we believe that we've done that.
So it's available now. We should let people know at 7 Boulder restaurants, right?
Yes.
Name a few of them.
Yeah. Zeal, Leaf, Naked Lunch, Dune Dune Box. Trying to remember our others. I live down in Denver, so forget sometimes.
So, and you can find out about these on...
Yeah, on our website, DeliverZero.com.
But the newest thing, and I think it may have a huge impact, is that you're doing a test at the two ideal markets, the one in Boulder and the one in Denver. I've been here long enough to remember when Ideal Market was kind of the only local market in Boulder.
Yeah.
It was kind of a prototype for what was to come, and now it's owned by Whole Foods.
Yeah.
And so much takeout food comes out of supermarkets now.
Yeah, and Whole Foods especially, they do a lot of hot bar, salad bar meals that come in those typical cardboard boxes. And just like you said, we started a pilot with Whole Foods, to test out reusable containers for the hot bar and the salad bar.
But just at Ideal in Boulder?
Starting at the two Ideal markets, right. One in Boulder, one in Denver. And Whole Foods has essentially, this is a pilot for them because they want to see.
So you go to the Ideal market.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got your 4-year-old with you and they're hungry.
Yeah.
And you fill it with macaroni and cheese.
Yep.
And take it home. What happens to the container after that?
Yeah, so your responsibility, I guess, is to rinse the container out, give it a quick rinse, and then return the container to Whole Foods at your next visit.
Ideal Market.
Ideal Market
because,
at your next
because
visit.
Because the other Whole Foods markets aren't involved.
Not yet, but Whole Foods as an entity is involved, and they wanted to start at the Ideal Markets. But just like you said, you get your food, instead of putting it in one of the disposable containers, you put it in a reusable container, you check out, there's a $1 deposit in the Whole Foods system. In our restaurant product, there's no deposits, but for Whole Foods, it's a $1 deposit. And then when you return the container back, you get that deposit back.
I have a very quick question.
Yeah.
I was getting some styrofoam from a restaurant that I know and love, and I asked them if they could perhaps like pick up this reusable container model, and they didn't know how.
Yeah.
So how can restaurants that who may be interested in this, or you know, in theory at least, be interested in it, how can they find out more?
Yeah, so our website, DeliverZero.com, has a lot of info for customers and also for restaurants where they can come and learn about our system. And it's very easy to contact us. Like we're here in the area. My name's Ashwin. You can email me at Ashwin@DeliverZero.com. support@DeliverZero.com, restaurants@DeliverZero.com. Any of those email addresses will go directly to our inboxes.
The biggest thing you can do is to tell your favorite restaurant how to do this so that they no more styrofoam ends up in the landfill. My guest today here on Radio Nibbles, Ashwin Ramdas.
Yeah.
I hope you come back in a year and tell us that this is widespread throughout the community.
Yeah, thanks. I hope so too.
Well, thank you so much to Ashwin Ramdas and to John Lindorf, as always, for hosting Radio Nibbles. That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Benita Lee, Eli Kalin, Jimmy Searfoss, Alexis Kenyon, Radio Nibbles host John Lindorf, and Ashwin Ramdas for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for Black Talk. That's coming up just on the other side of the news headlines from the BBC.